Alrighty, so I'd like to welcome everybody to another webcast from your Azure state and local government team. Today we're going to be talking about leveraging Azure Cloud Storage Made Simple. This is part of our hybrid cloud storage solution. And today the presenter is Asif Khan. He's an Azure Storage Specialist for U.S. Public Sector. And we also have Dan Pessin with us today too, and he's going to be helping us answer some questions that you type into the chat window. So with that, Asif, I'll go ahead and turn it over to you.
Thank you, Mike. Good morning and good afternoon, everyone. My name is Asif Khan, as Mike mentioned, and I am the Cloud Storage Specialist or Azure Storage Specialist for the public sector for the U.S. So Dan, that Mike just introduced, Dan Pessin and specialize in storage solutions involving the cloud. So the topic of today's discussion is leveraging the Azure Cloud. And specifically from the perspective of storage and how using the cloud can actually simplify the management of your storage environment. We refer to this as hybrid cloud storage because the concept that we have is that you need to keep the data that you're using in your data center in use today, and the data that's not in use can be put up in the cloud. So that's the hybrid cloud model, specifically as it applies to storage. And the sentence here, Storage Made Simple, is alluding to a company we acquired about 3 years ago called StorSimple. And StorSimple is all about making storage simple, and it's an appliance that actually sits in your data center and facilitates the hybrid cloud model that I just described. So why don't we get started? I want to start off with a few definitions first. We talk about storage in general terms throughout this presentation here, but I want to just throw out a couple of definitions here. When we talk about tier one storage, tier two storage, and tier three storage, what we're referring to is tier one storage. An example of this would be the mainframe class storage, the enterprise storage that's used to run your mission critical, run your business type of applications. So this, an example of this would be EMC Symmetrix or Hitachi VSP or HP XP model or the IBM 8000 series. These are really, really high-end storage units, usually priced in the millions of dollars. And when customers buy this tier of storage, the main thing they're looking for is availability. They're not buying it for the speed. They're not buying it for anything else. The main thing that they need is that this system cannot go down. I need three levels of redundancy on everything. My application and my data has to be available no matter what. However, most of us, when we're talking about storage, we're usually referring to tier two storage. This is our mainstream storage arrays. This is your EMC VNX or Isilon or NetApp or HP 3PAR or Dell Equilogic or Dell Compellent and several others out there, the all-flash arrays. And the main thing we're looking for in this tier is performance. We want an all-purpose storage array that has great performance so that we can run our OLTP type workloads, our analytics workloads, our Exchange environments, our databases, all the different applications that require great throughput, great performance, and lots of capacity. Now, the problem is most of us end up buying this tier two storage, and because it's easy enough just to add disk shelves to it, we use it for storing everything else that don't require a lot of performance. File shares, image archives, audio, video files, things like that. And really what we should be doing is taking some of that data that doesn't require all that performance and putting it on tier three storage, where the focus is on efficiency and capacity. So basically what we're looking for in the efficiency tier is how much data can I store at the lowest cost per gigabyte or lowest cost per terabyte, depending on how you measure it. And so what we're going to be talking about here is how do we take the data that's not very performance intensive, that could benefit from the efficiency of tier three storage, but then give you some of the performance of tier two and kind of marry the best of both of those. So that's what we're going to be talking about. The other definition I want to go through is cloud services. Now, almost any Microsoft presentation you see, you're probably going to see this slide. and I believe it's kind of a busy slide, but it shows something really important. It shows the different towers of service that's available as far as your IT workloads go. So from the left, we start off with what we've been doing traditionally for the last 10 plus years, which is having hardware and software in our data center and running our workloads and managing it ourselves. The next one over is moving some of the infrastructure. In other words, having a cloud service provide us VMs, and then on those VMs we could load whatever we want. We can take our OS templates, we can take our applications, we can take our custom scripts and load them on as we see fit. The next one over is the platform as a service, and this is really a developer tool. So this is where developers need a runtime environment, and they just want to worry about loading their data on and running their applications and not have to worry about the underlying patching of OS and things like that. And then finally, on the right is software as a service, and this is probably what most of us are familiar with when we talk about the cloud. This would be, an example would be Salesforce.com or Office 365 or Concur, if anyone uses that for their travel, or Gmail or Hotmail, all these services where you're basically getting an end-user service and you're subscribing on a monthly basis. Now, as I said, this I find this slide to be very busy with lots of words on it, and I have trouble sometimes understanding the nuances of it myself. A real easy way to understand this is to think of it as pizza as a service. So if you think of the different towers of how you can get your pizza, you can buy all the ingredients, use your own oven and bake it at home. That's the data center model. And then you can go all the way from buying the DiGiorno at the store and baking it yourself, to calling Domino's and having it delivered to you, to going out to the restaurant and ordering pizza and having them serve it to you. So hopefully that makes sense as far as the different categories of cloud services go. As I said, this conversation is about storage. However, Microsoft, we don't think of ourselves as a storage company. We think of ourselves as a cloud company, and storage is one of the services that we offer. So with that, and with that kind of background, let's dive right into it and talk about how the cloud can simplify your storage environment. Now, as I mentioned earlier, I'm going to be talking about StorSimple in particular, and how that fits into the overall scheme that I've been talking about and will be talking about. And there's really just two things that I want to cover. How does this technology work, and how much does it cost? And the reason I've narrowed it down to these two, besides the fact that we present to customers probably, you know, over 100 per month, and at the end of the day, this is what it comes down to, what they really want to know about. And the other reason is that for some people, when they see how it works and what the technology is all about, they get really excited about it and they think, this is something I really need in my environment. And other people might say, well, yeah, okay, you know, I have plenty of capacity, I don't really need something new, but this is kind of interesting. Tell me about the pricing model. And then when we go into the pricing model, they see that, wow, this is really, it's a really compelling pricing model. So hopefully we'll be able to entice you with both, but if you are not turned on by one, hopefully you'll be turned on by the other, because we do have a compelling technology and we have an equally compelling pricing model to support it. So with that, let's get started and talk about how it works. So when we think about a little bit of background here, when we think about storage, the main thing that we care about is protecting our data. We buy storage because we want it to store our data and make our data available to us, but make sure that it's protected no matter what, that we don't lose it, it doesn't get corrupted, it doesn't get accidentally deleted where we can't get it back. So we need to protect our data. So in order to do that, first of all, we start off with a primary disk, whatever that may be. It could be direct attached disk on your servers. It could be a storage area network. It could be network attached storage. Whatever it may be, you have some kind of primary disk in your environment. And in order to protect that, the data that's on that disk, you're using some sort of backup software tool, Microsoft Data Protection Manager, or Symantec Net Backup, or Veeam, or Commvault, or any of the others that are out there. But you're using some kind of tool to create a backup image and then send that to backup disk, or to staging disk, as some people call it. And once you have it on disk, then what traditionally most people have done is send it off to tape. And now sending it off to tape, these days is more having more to do with compliance rather than saving the data. The people who are putting their backups on tape are the ones who need to save it long term, and they're putting it on a truck and sending it offsite for storage, maybe for compliance reasons, whatever it may be. But more and more what we're seeing are customers are backing up to disk and then replicating that backup to another set of disks in another data center. And maybe even in addition to that, what they're doing is that they're taking their data off their primary disk and replicating that to a secondary array in a secondary data center in order to have their mission critical or their tier one data available more immediately than having to replicate it from a backup and bring it back and recover it that way. It just depends on what your SLAs are for different types of storage. Now, more recently in the past few years, what we've seen is that more and more customers are moving away from tape. So they're getting rid of tape because either it's not reliable or it's no longer cost effective or for any number of reasons. They're finding out that if I just back up to disk and then replicate that disk to another set of disks, that's usually sufficient for my needs. So another innovation that's come along is the use of cloud gateways. So whereas your backup software can back up to disk, it can replicate to a second set of disks. Similarly, it can also back up to the cloud. So it can take your backup data and through a cloud gateway, push it up to the cloud and store it up there. And that ends up being a very cost-effective way of doing things. And depending on how you measure things, in some cases, it's cheaper than even putting it on tape. The other thing is storage device to the left on the picture here, you can also take your primary data and push it up to the cloud. So now you've got your primary data and your backup data backed up to the cloud. Now, that alone doesn't do a whole lot because your data by itself is not very useful unless you have the applications and the databases that access that data and if they can get access to it. So most of us, in addition to protecting our data, we also want to have some way of having our applications and our databases be able to access that data. So what we're doing is we're taking our servers or our server images or hopefully our VMs and replicating them to that secondary site if we have it. Well, guess what? If you're doing that, you also have the ability to take your VMs and copy them up to the cloud. So what we've done here is we've used the cloud, the blue boxes on the right side, to replicate what traditionally we've been doing by using a secondary data center with a secondary set of hardware, which, as you can imagine, it always gets very expensive. Now, with the cloud, you're paying for what you use. You're paying only when you run it, and it becomes a lot more cost-effective. However, that's just being more cost-effective and replicating the same functionality that you have today is usually not enough to make a big leap like this. Most customers, if I present this to them in this way, what they'll tell me is that, yeah, cloud sounds compelling. However, I already own my secondary data center. I already own all the hardware that's in there. It's a sunk cost, so I don't see the value in just moving everything to the cloud. To which we would reply that, okay, well, in addition to being able to replicate what you can do today, how about if we can introduce things like authentication at the cloud level, identity services, for example, orchestration, the ability to power up servers in a certain order, wait for a ping, wait for network response, and then power up the next server, and then run all these steps in the way that we want in a completely automated way. And what if we can do all of this? What if we can do a simulated failover in a bubble without affecting our production environment and do that for audit reasons? Come up with a report saying we did a complete failover, simulated, and here are the results. Then it starts getting a little more interesting, and there are a lot of services that we provide in the Azure cloud that can facilitate all of that. Now, I'll get back to that in a little bit, but for now, what I want to focus on is really the primary data center. So today, even if you were to adopt all those blue boxes on the right side and have a what we call a site to cloud failover scenario or failover strategy, you probably are not confident enough to do that today without still having your secondary data center. So it becomes an added cost. But over time, as you test it, as you see, well, yeah, this really works, actually what you'll be able to do is to get rid of that secondary data center and rely on the cloud instead of doing site-to-site failovers, be able to do site-to-cloud failovers and back. So as I said, we'll get back to the cloud, the blue boxes here in a little bit. But now let's focus on the primary data center itself and how that's laid out. So going from legacy data protection to what I described earlier as hybrid cloud storage, the way hybrid cloud storage would work is that we would take your existing environment and parse it out. So remember we talked about the tier two storage being all about performance. So if you have applications that require a lot of IOPS, if you have databases that require a lot of IOPS and throughput and performance, then let's leave that where it is. And instead, let's parse out the unstructured data. And I'll generically refer to it as a file server, but basically what I'm saying is servers that serve up unstructured data. Now, if we can parse that out and take that data, and instead of putting it on our primary disk that's performance focused, why not get a device called StorSimple, which is an iSCSI connected device. So for storage administrators, it should be very, very familiar to them. What if we can take our unstructured files and put them on StorSimple? StorSimple is a storage array with, as I said, an iSCSI connection. It has solid-state disks. It has spinning SAS disks. It has inline deduplication, compression, encryption, thin provisioning, all the things that a storage administrator would expect from a modern storage array. From that perspective, it looks exactly like any other storage array with a couple of main distinctions. And the real main distinction here is that with primary disk, when you run out of space, then what do? You go out and buy more disk shelves and add to your capacity. And with StorSimple, we don't have to do that. So we eliminate the need for capacity management, because all that happens is that once the StorSimple device and the capacity that it has within it, once that gets full, once it hits 95% full, then what happens is that the oldest data gets tagged and gets tiered to the cloud. So now it gets moved to the cloud without you having to do anything. So you have data that's being written to the device, and as the device starts getting full, you do nothing, and then your oldest data will automatically start getting pushed up to the cloud. Now to the user, it's going to look exactly invisible. They're not going to know if their data is sitting on solid-state disk or a spinning disk on the StorSimple device within their data center, or if it's sitting up in the cloud. They know that if I need a spreadsheet I was working on 6 months ago, or if I need a video that I created 6 months ago or a year ago, I go into the folder that I normally go into, and I double-click on the file that I would normally click on. And, yeah, it may take an extra few seconds depending on the size of the file and depending on the latency and bandwidth you have available on your WAN connection. But that file will pop up just like any other file. There's no stubs left behind and archives. We're not dealing with any of that. We're just talking about the cloud being just another tier of storage. So we have our solid state tier, we have our spinning disk tier, and now we have the cloud tier. The other thing that StorSimple can do is it can take backups within the system itself, backups in the form of snapshots. Now, once we've created these snapshots, snapshots are dependent on the production data. So if something happens to the primary data, then the snapshot is also corrupted. We need an independent body of data for the snapshots themselves. So what we do is you can create local snapshots from which you can do a quick recovery, or if there's more widespread corruption or deletion of data from your primary volumes, then you can take your local snapshots and copy them to the cloud as well. So here we're showing that there are two ways your data can get to the cloud. On an ad hoc basis, when your system gets 95% full, your oldest data will automatically get pushed up to the cloud. And then the other way is that your data gets backed up locally, and then those backups are scheduled to go up to the cloud. So you can schedule, you can create up to 255 snapshots at any given time per volume. And so if you wanted to create hourlies and dailies and weeklies and monthlies and yearlies, you can have all those and maybe just keep the most recent ones local and then keep a copy in the cloud in case your system goes down, your data center goes down, you have a disaster recovery scenario. So you have a copy of all your data in the cloud that you can send on a scheduled basis. And then on top of that, if your system gets 95% full, then it automatically will send data up to the cloud anyway. And what this does, it really eliminates the need for capacity management. Now, the other thing you can do is we were talking before about having your, not only your data in the cloud, but your applications in the cloud. So if you have your VMs in the cloud, what you can do is take those VMs and access your data in the cloud directly. So you don't have to pull it all down in order to view it. So the advantages here, let's take a minute and talk about it, is first of all, with Azure, when I'm sending data up to Azure, a couple things to note here is that all data before it ever leaves your data center will get encrypted using AES 256-bit military-grade encryption. And it gets encrypted the whole time it's sitting in Azure. In fact, there's three layers of encryption that we employ between your data center and the cloud. The second thing to note is with Azure is redundancy. So with what I mean by redundancy is that when your data gets pushed up to the cloud, at a minimum, you can have three copies of your data sitting in an Azure data center, sitting on different power supplies, sitting on different networks and different racks and different zones within the data center. And at a maximum, you can take those three copies that are sitting in an Azure data center, and you can copy those three copies to another Azure data center. So you can have six copies in the cloud, even though you just pay for one copy. So there's a lot of redundancy once your data gets up there. And finally, the granularity. Because we're sending data up there in the form of data blocks, fixed 64K size data blocks, then if you need to pull data back, like that example I was using earlier of a user who wants to click on a six-month-old spreadsheet, then only the data that they need is going to get pulled down. We're not pulling down an entire volume. So that saves you a lot of money on your WAN usage, your bandwidth, your latency, and all of that. The other thing is with StorSimple, what StorSimple gives you is the ability to optimize your data. As I mentioned earlier, we have thin provisioning, we have automated tiering, we have inline deduplication, inline compression, and inline encryption of data. So we optimize your data, and there's two ways that your data goes to the cloud. By tiering your active data, which is the ad hoc method, once your system gets full, it just sends the So you create the backups on the device itself, and you can schedule hourly, daily, weekly, whatever you like, and replicate that data up to the cloud on a scheduled basis. Now, obviously, there are some limitations to this type of architecture. What you don't want is to put transactional databases on here and a lot of structured data that does a lot of calling, database calls, because if some of that data ends up in the cloud, the latency could be unacceptable. So the typical workloads we look for in a scenario like this is we're looking for bodies of data that are high capacity, that need to be retained for a long period of time, and that have low impact. And what I mean by low impact really is low performance requirements, low sensitivity to latency. So again, that example of a user clicking on a 6-month-old spreadsheet, if it takes an extra second or two for it to pull up, they're really not going to care. That's what we mean by low impact. So for those types of workloads, this StorSimple hybrid cloud storage scenario works really, really well. And when we talk to customers who are interested in this, 9 times out of 10, everybody has file shares, departmental shares, home directories, things like that, that they're spending way too much money on keeping on their expensive arrays, backing it up using expensive backup software, and putting it on tape or putting it on backup disk. And this solution takes care of all that for you. So file shares works really great. Image archives, we talk to agencies that have business records that they have to scan, universities and school districts that have student records that they have to scan and keep for long periods of time. We talk to correctional institutes that have inmate phone calls that they have to record and keep for long periods of time. Surveillance video, different types of video, that for compliance reasons you have to keep long term. And other such data like that. So I see there's some questions. Dan and Mike, are we covering all the questions? Retention policy. Can you set policies to move data that is old to the store simple device? Well, when we're talking about, and this is a question by Angie, when we talk about setting policies to move data, are you talking about moving data to the store simple device, or are you talking about moving from store simple to the cloud? Because if you're talking about moving to store simple, there are third-party tools that can do that. That can, for example, if you have your data sitting on a primary array and you want to move them to store simple when they get to be a certain age, there are some third-party tools that can do that. If you're talking about moving data from store simple to the cloud, you can set up policies, and really it happens on a volume basis, because this is a block-based device. So what we do is we can take volumes and just wait until the system gets full and the data gets pushed up, or you can set up the cloud snapshot so they get sent up on a scheduled basis. Okay, to store simple. Thanks. Okay, so are the typical workloads store simple or Azure based? Dan, could you clarify what you mean by that? The typical workloads you would put on store simple, and then they would get pushed to Azure. Is that what you mean? And then Keith, does it work with Azure Go? Okay. Keith, your question about Azure Government, we'll be announcing that shortly, before the end of the year. It will be enabled, is what we've been told. Any other questions? Good questions, by the way. All right. So let's move on and talk about is the intention of Store Simple to be used as the primary storage disk? Yeah, that's a great question. We talk to customers who say that they want to use this as their backup target. And even though we have customers that are doing that and it works for that, it is meant to be a primary storage array. So what we're talking about here is, rather than sending your backup image files to Store Simple, what is more effective is if you take certain workloads off your primary array and run them on Store Simple and let Store Simple handle the backups for you. And Dan is getting upset because he wanted to answer the question and I keep answering them. So, okay, I'll keep quiet and move on. All right, so now we've talked about the basic functionality of Store Simple, but as I mentioned in the previous slide, Store Simple is a storage device, and when we talk about any storage device, what we care about is data protection. So when we have the cloud to use as a data protection tool, how can we use that? So let's talk about cloud-based data protection for a minute. And here what I want to focus on is when we think about data protection, we think about, well, I need two devices, and if one fails, I fail over to the other. That's traditionally when we think about data protection, we think of it that way. And we have a twist to that I'll talk about here, in that when you have data coming into Store Simple and it's getting filled up with your data, as I mentioned earlier, as it gets full, it goes up. The spillover goes to the cloud. In addition, you can take snapshots and copy them up to the cloud. In this scenario, what I'm talking about is having two different Store Simple devices, which is supporting different sets of users. They're completely not connected to each other. So Store Simple is Store Simple A is supporting set of users A, and Store Simple B is supporting set of users B. And they're completely independent from one another. But now, watch what happens. If Store Simple A were to fail, then what happens is that the volume container, which is just a container that holds all the volumes, as the name implies, just connects to StorSimple B, and now users just need to be pointed to StorSimple B, and they can get access to their data again. So it's pretty seamless. We're using the cloud as the point of failover. So I could lose a device and have another device take over and still get access to my data because everything's backed up to the cloud. Now, let's say that I've done this failover. I only have one StorSimple device left in production. And what I'm finding is that if I'm running Volume Container A and Volume Container B, my system is really getting overloaded. It's really, really full right now. And I don't know when I'll get a replacement for A. I don't know when Data Center A is going to come back online. So I need to take, let's say Volume Container A is production, and let's say Volume Container B is dev and test. It's not as important. So what I want to do is I want to take Container B off of StorSimple and run it in the cloud. So I can, just as when StorSimple A failed and the Volume Container A failed over to StorSimple B, similarly, I can take Volume Container B and say, you know what, I want to run this in the cloud. I want to open up a StorSimple VM in the cloud and connect to my Volume Container and access my data that way. So when you have a StorSimple device, you can create an unlimited number of StorSimple VMs in the cloud that can access your data in the cloud. A great example of this would be, let's say you needed to do a file system scan or change file attributes, or you got a Freedom of Information Act request and you need to go find that one little file, and you don't want to have to download your entire volume because that file was from several years ago. So this would be a great example of powering up a StorSimple VM and connecting to that Volume Container and doing my search in the cloud, getting the information that I need. And once I have that one document that I need, then I can just blow it all away and I only get charged for the time that I used the VM in the cloud. Now, as far as what does that VM connect to? There's a couple different ways. If you have your servers at your data center and you want to connect over over VPN or over a direct connection like an ExpressRoute, MPLS connection or something like that, you can certainly do that. The other thing you can do is you can fire up a cloud VM, and that cloud VM can connect via iSCSI to that StorSimple VM, which connects to your data. So everything we can do in our data center, you can replicate in the cloud. So you can run 100% in the cloud this way. So what this facilitates is the site-to-cloud failover scenarios that I was talking about. Most IT organizations are looking to develop a DR strategy. They usually develop a DR strategy for their gold, silver, and bronze, or tier one, tier two, tier three. And so for their tier one, money's no object. My downtime cost per hour is high enough that I'll spend whatever it takes, but my data has to be up within an hour or less, or a few minutes or less. For tier two, it might be another strategy. And for tier three, usually by then you've run out of money and you don't do anything. So this is a really low-cost way, a very cost-effective way, of creating a failover or DR strategy for your tier two, tier three type data, your file shares, your archives, and things like that. So the other thing I wanted to mention is that this cloud VM that's accessing the StorSimple VM, it could be part of these guys that we talked about in an earlier slide. Remember them? So I said I would bring them back up, and the reason I bring it back up is because this scenario is a great DR scenario for those workloads that you've put into StorSimple, your file shares, your departmental shares, your image archives, your audio, video archives, things like that. So now I can do all those things I talked about earlier and be able to access my data in a different way. Is managed using the Azure Management Console. So if any of you are familiar with the Azure Management Console, if you've used any of the services that are there, like creating virtual machines, creating Oracle databases, creating a website, any of those things, it's the same management console that you can manage everything I just talked about here. Okay? Now, the reason I bring up these blue boxes on the right is because this is something where to develop this, to deploy this, to test this, it takes money. You need to get on the cloud. You need to try it. You need to set up your orchestration. You need to test your authentication, your identity services. You need to maybe do some simulated failovers. And so what I'm going to be talking about next is our pricing model and how our pricing model can help you pay for all that deploying and testing so that it really costs you nothing. If you purchase StorSimple, we will give you the Azure credits to do all this testing of developing a DR strategy. So with that, we're going to move on to the pricing model for StorSimple. Okay, and before I get into the pricing itself, I want to talk about, and I saw a couple of questions fly by about whether it's an appliance, whether it's something that actually sits in your data center. And actually, yes, it does sit in your data center. There are two different models that are available. There's the smaller model, which is the model 8100, the StorSimple 8100, and it has 15 terabytes of local storage capacity. And what I mean by 15 terabytes is that's the usable number. That's the actual number that you're actually using. The larger device is the model 8600. It has 40 terabytes of capacity. So when I was talking before about 95% utilization, when we get to, on the smaller device, when you get to about 14 terabytes, that's when it starts pushing data up. On the larger device, when you get to about 38 terabytes, it starts pushing data up. Now, if you look at the back of the device, you'll see that it's not just a PC or a regular server with VMs running on it. It's actually purpose-built hardware. It's enterprise-class hardware, and it has active-passive controllers. It has 1 gig and 10 gig ports. Your software upgrades are, for the most part, non-disruptive, meaning that the software upgrade happens on the passive controller first, and then the active controller gets failed over to the passive controller, then the active controller gets updated. So most software upgrades are non-disruptive. We have redundant power and cooling modules. All the Ethernet ports can be set up as multipath. We do inline dedupe, inline compression, inline encryption of data, and your encrypted data as it travels between your data center and Azure, it's going over port 443, and everything is managed through the cloud. So now that I've talked about what the products are, what the two different models are and their capabilities, let's talk about the pricing model itself. And Dan, if you want to help me out here, you're more than welcome to chime in. But basically, the model here, it's very simple. We're not actually selling the StorSimple device. We're encouraging you to commit to buying an Azure commitment. So if you commit to a certain amount of Azure, we will give you the StorSimple device and pay for everything for the first year. And then after the first year, if you don't want to continue using it, you don't owe us anything. The device is yours to keep. If you do want to continue, then you just pay for the services that you're using on Azure. So if you're using cloud snapshots, if you're using the overflow capabilities of Azure to store your additional data, then you just pay for that going forward. The details of which are here, and again, Dan, if you want to chime in, you're more than welcome to. Otherwise, I'll just keep going. Go ahead, Dan.
You're doing great.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay. So step one, buying Azure. All it takes is a minimum commitment to Azure services. And if you want the smaller model, the model 8100, it just requires $60,000 of Azure monetary commit. This is for 1 year. It's a 12-month commitment. If you want the larger model, it's a $100,000 commitment. And once you make that commitment, that $60,000 or that $100,000 could be used. Think of it as an Azure gift card. You can use it for any services that are on the Azure Management Console, not just storage. So even though the StorSimple uses the storage services, and you're certainly welcome to use that, you're probably not going to use all the $60,000 for storage. So you will have the credits available to you to experiment with other services, such as some of the DR tools that I talk about, the orchestration, the identity services, to test all of that. So that's what I was saying earlier, that we will pay you to try out the DR capabilities. Now, once you've made that commitment, we will ship the device to you. We'll pay for shipping. We'll pay for someone to come out and actually deploy the system for you, connect it to your cloud account, provide you with an onboard concierge service to get you familiar with Azure Cloud, and even provide you with data migration assistance. We will also include hardware and software gold support for the first year. And if you're a premier customer, then we will upgrade you to platinum support. If you're not a premier customer, you can pay $2,500 for that platinum support. And that's really the only, that $2,500 is really the only additional cost there might be. Everything else is covered. Now, after the first, and by the way, that $2,500 platinum support it provides you with, besides a higher level of service, it provides you with an on-site spare parts kit. So let's say you had a drive that failed or a controller that failed or a power supply that failed. You will have a spare part in your data center. So when you call into support and you tell them that, hey, I just got an alert that my power supply failed, for example, they will walk you through how to pull out that bad power supply, replace it with a good one, and then the next morning FedEx will be knocking on your door with a replacement part for you. So we've minimized your downtime. Now, after that first year is over, then you just renew your Azure services as needed. The cost of cloud storage is roughly $500 per terabyte per year. I say roughly because you'd get your actual quote from your LAR, from your Microsoft partner. The prices are subject to change. We've traditionally had some pretty aggressive discount schedules over the last 5 years, and we expect that to continue. It's a very competitive market out there. So as prices go down, you will take advantage of that. So for example, if you have, let's say you got the model 8100, which has 15 terabytes on board, and let's say you had 50 terabytes of data altogether. After dedupe and compression, let's say that gets shrunk down to about to 2 to 1. So now it's down to 25 terabytes. Roughly 14 terabytes can stay on the device, and roughly 11 terabytes are going to go up to the cloud. Let's just make the math easy and just say it's 10 terabytes that goes up to the cloud. So it's going to cost you, at $500 per terabyte per year, it's going to cost you $5,000 a year to store that additional data in the cloud. That's cheaper than buying a disk shelf and adding capacity, never mind the downtime and all of that. It's just automatic. The only other cost there is for gold support on the smaller model, it's $6,000 a year, and for the larger model, it's $7,500 per year. That includes all your hardware replacements or repairs. It includes all your software updates. As you can see, the asterisk at the bottom, that's it. There's no fine print. That's all, that's the whole offer. Dan, feel free to chime in if you want to add anything.
Hey, Asif, this is Mike. I want to jump in real quick. So there was a question more on the, not on this specific offer, but on the device itself. Can you discuss or talk a little bit about bandwidth requirements that they might need or that they might see used? These devices.
Great question. So the minimum requirement we have for this is 40 megabits per second dedicated. Because of the way the data gets pushed up to the cloud, you can schedule it. So you can have scheduled uploads in the middle of the night or on the weekends. And then if any data needs to be pulled ad hoc, it can it happens at a pretty granular level. So if you have 40 megabits per second, it'll work okay. But that's the minimum. Really, what we recommend is 100 megabits per second dedicated to it per device. If you have that, what you're going to get is the equivalent of being able to upload a terabyte every 24 hours. Okay, so let's just say that you had 10 terabytes that you needed to upload to the cloud, and you had a 100 meg pipe. That means it would take 10 days for that data, if it's constantly being pushed up to the cloud. It would take 10 days for that transfer to happen. If you have a gigabit pipe, obviously that's going to happen a lot faster. Most customers we speak to tend to have 100 megabits available, so it's not a problem. Some of the universities we speak to, they have they're members of Internet 2, so they have much faster pipes, and obviously they get much faster throughput. But really, your point of diminishing returns happens at about 300 to 400 megabits per second. After that, there's really not much need for much bandwidth beyond that. Any other questions? Okay, so...
Asif, actually, I do have one thing. So there was a question. Could you just go back over real quick the professional services, the on-site setup real quick, just to clarify that?
Yeah, so number two here, Microsoft will ship a serviceable device to you. The first bullet point is that shipping, deployment, and data migration assistance is provided. And what we mean by that is that we will ship the device to you. We'll apply BIF funding. BIF is just business funding. It's an internal program we have to help our customers out. And this will pay for a certified partner to come out to your site or remote if you prefer. And set up the system for you. Now, what's not included in that is the actual racking and stacking and power, setting up the power and the network connections and all that. But we have a pre-installed checklist where we go over what you need to do, and it's just basically making sure you have a certain number of IP addresses, you have your MTP IP, your time server, and a few other things. And then when the engineer comes out, we will have done a lot of the prep work over the phone or over link ahead of time. And then once they come out there, it really takes about an hour or so to set up the device, and then they spend the rest of the time sharing knowledge transfer, sharing best practices, and discussing follow-ups, and then planning a data migration assistance plan. Okay, there's a lot of questions flying in now. How, if at all, does this help enable a migration strategy of data to Office 365? Michael R., great question. We have customers that are planning on moving to Office 365, and they know that they can't make it happen overnight, and so they see this as a tremendous interim solution. We also have customers that move most of their data to Office 365, but they might keep some departmental share data local. One of the advantages that StorSimple has is that because you can do snapshots and backups, you can easily recover from corrupted data. You can go back a week, a month, a year if you want to. So that's one of the advantages, or a couple of the advantages that some customers see. Chung asks, do we need to patch this appliance on a monthly basis? No, it's not on a monthly basis. I would say that major updates come about once every 6 months, and in between there might be some patch fixes that come. You can automatically download the patches, but then you decide when you want to install them. And again, the installation happens on the passive node first. Then the controller fails over to that recent, that, you know, just upgraded node, and then it upgrades the node that just got failed over. So it happens non-disruptively. Can I easily move my StorSimple user folders to O365 OneDrive for business folders as part of a migration path? Mike, I might have to defer that question to you, because you can access your folders with the StorSimple virtual machine, but as far as how you would migrate it to OneDrive, I'd rather have Mike answer that.
Yeah, so with OneDrive, it's going to be just the same type of migration experience. So let's say you deploy StorSimple first, and then you've put all of your content out there, and then at some point in time you choose to go to Office 365. It's a regular migration process, and there's multiple ways that you can do it. It's not going to be any different than if it was on any other physical storage system on premises. So you would either manually move them, you could script it, or you could utilize some third-party migration tools that are available out there to do some of these file moves.
Dan Schneider is asking the question, is the cost double for redundant systems? So if you want two of them, would it be for 8100, would it be 120K? Yes, that would be the case if you wanted to have redundant systems, but keep in mind that second system is not a cold or even a warm system. It could be a hot system that's running different workloads. So what you can do is split your workload and run half of it on one, half of it on the other, and have them fail over for each other.
And then also, one of the things about that is you do have redundancy built into this if you're using the cloud snapshots, because you also have access to the Azure virtual appliance, so the StorSimple virtual appliance in Azure, so you can get access to your files there. Although, you know, it's going to be a different type of access, and it's not going to be just the same as if you had it local, but that is another option you have. All right, so we've got about 5 more minutes left on the call here.
Yeah, I'm certainly willing to take more questions. I actually just had one more slide left, which is just links to, and I think, Mike, you've already given out the link to this presentation. So here's if you wanted to find out more, here's everything from a 6-minute video on the concept of hybrid cloud storage to specifics about the 8000 series that we just talked about, data sheets, white papers, case studies, et cetera, and even a free ebook if you're really having trouble sleeping at night. Chung is asking, let me see if I, will the link to presentation be sent an email? Could it? Michael R. is asking, Mike, I think you sent the link already.
Yeah, and I'll go ahead and send that back out to all the attendees here. So I'll do a follow-up for everybody that's on the call right now. You'll receive another email from me that'll have the links to the on-demand recording of this and also the slide deck.
Okay, and then Chung is asking, can I use the StorSimple as regular file server directly using UNC Path, or I will have to front-end with another Windows server? Yeah, because it's an iSCSI device, you will need a Windows server in front of it. But the Windows server can connect to it the same way it connects to any other storage array. Vaughn is asking, will there be a deeper dive presentation with a demo of how to use the StorSimple device? Schedule it with Dan, which I think he just answered. Be happy to spend more time with you.
Yep, so if anybody wants to schedule a follow-up, feel free to reach out to your Microsoft account team, and they can get with Dan and Asif to do deeper dive discussions. If you don't have contact information for your Microsoft account team, you have my email address. It's Mike Hacker, so just go ahead and email me, and I will make sure I get your proper account team looped in so that we can take care of that. And then, based on the feedback that we're getting here, that I may ask Asif and Dan to come back again in the future to maybe do a deeper dive in demonstrations.
Yeah, that'd be great. So Chung is asking, we can't buy this until later this year as government customer. Dan, do you want to answer this question?
Yeah, sure. So, no, StorSimple is available for purchase for our state and local government customers. There's nothing that would prevent you from transacting to acquire obtaining the StorSimple array with the Azure cloud services.
And I think Chung may be referring to Azure Government.
Oh, I'm sorry. It is on the roadmap to support Azure Government later this year, yes.
And I'd like to jump in real quick on this too. So just to be clear, not everyone needs to be in the Azure Government cloud. So if you are looking to utilize the StorSimple device, because it has the built-in encryption and, of course, all the other features, that usually meets all of the compliance needs for any organization. If you do have specific workloads that require CJIS certification, so let's say maybe police video or other types of things like that, and your state will not just accept encryption but really needs to go through the full CJIS process, then that's when you would need to utilize our Azure Government environment. And as Dan Nassif has mentioned, that's coming here shortly.
So Chung is asking, when we say later this year, are we talking about July or December? And I think the way to answer that is that the technical capabilities will be available by July. There are additional steps that have to be taken, not just for us, but for anyone connecting to the cloud, as far as certification goes. So we have to meet FIPS FIPS certification. We have to meet FedRAMP, CJIS. And so we're in the process of getting all those certifications completed. And so as the certifications are completed, then we will be compliant with plugging into the government cloud. So, Chung, to answer your question in kind of a vague way, we will have connectivity, but whether we will have all the certifications completed by July, we don't know that yet. I know that Dan and I speak with our product engineering team on a regular basis, at least weekly, and we're getting regular updates. So as soon as we have that information, we can share it with you. If we buy now, there is no migration path from the business to government Azure, so we should wait. The government cloud is going to be treated as a separate cloud, just like Amazon or Rackspace or something else. And so it'll be a migration. Our team is working on Azure, as we call it, Azure E to Azure G migration, but we don't have the specifics on that yet. Dan, anything you want to add to that comment?
No, I think you covered it, Asif. A lot of this is work in progress. The only thing I would actually add is if there's an absolute need to leverage Store Simple today, by all means, we don't want you to wait. And you do not need, to Mike's comment, if you do not need the services available in Azure Government, it's a fantastic solution. We look forward to diving into more detail with anyone who wants to continue discussions.
All righty. So I think we're up against our time window here. So I'm going to go ahead and stop the